Leviticus chapter 14. This shall be the law of the leper in the day of his cleansing. He shall be brought to the priest. And the priest will examine him, and behold, if the plague of leprosy is healed, then the priest will command them to take for him who is to be cleansed two living clean birds, cedarwood, scarlet, and hyssop. The priest shall command them to kill one of the birds in an earthen vessel over running water. As for the living bird, he shall take it and the cedarwood, scarlet, and hyssop, and shall dip them and the living bird in the blood of the bird that was killed over the running water. He shall sprinkle on him who is to be cleansed from the leprosy seven times, and shall pronounce him clean, and shall let the living bird go into the open field. Well, I think that when you read about leprosy here, this isn't talking about the leprosy that we know today as a disease called technically Hansen's disease. Let's remember the Bible and the Old Testament was written in Hebrew. And we're reading here the English translation. And another translation for leprosy here is the stroke. And I suggest that it's not talking about leprosy as we know it, but a stroke from God as punishment for sin. That the person who gets hit with leprosy is someone who is disciplined by God. So then, this person, therefore, when they are cleansed, when the leprosy has stopped spreading and it's stopped in their body, it means that God has stopped punishing them. This was as if every now and again, when people sinned, they were struck with this judgment from God. That typically lasted for a period of time, and then it was cleansed. Now, leprosy, as in the disease that we now know, was not curable in those days, so it didn't just disappear, it didn't just go. It looks to me like this was a special disease that hit somebody as a punishment, as a judgment from God. And that's why when it finishes, there is this kind of sin offering for them. And these living birds, this living bird that's let go, and the one that's killed, it's rather like what happened on the Day of Atonement, where again there were two goats. One was killed, the other was let go. And the idea is that as that bird flew away, or as the goat on the Day of Atonement, the scapegoat, ran away free into the wilderness, this was to show that the sin had been dealt with. It's now gone far, far away, and that's it. And that's why now you read that the person was to be sprinkled with the blood and pronounced clean. He who is to be cleansed will wash his clothes, shave off all his hair, bathe himself in water, and shall be clean. Well, this, I think, shows the kind of cleansing that can happen for sin, that they get a new start. And we must allow people who've sinned and been forgiven to also have a new start in our own mind, not endlessly holding against them their past failures. But when he's cleansed, he will dwell outside his tent 7 days. It's all rather similar to what happened to Miriam. She was struck with a plague like this. And again, it's called leprosy, but I think it was really a stroke for judgment when she tried to usurp authority over Moses. She was publicly judged for that. But it was not for a long time. It was for a fairly short time. Then after that, the man is to make an offering to show that he is now dedicated to God. And he has to offer a sin offering and a burnt offering. Well, it's not a sin to get leprosy. It's not a sin to get sick. So I think, therefore, that this situation when somebody was hit with this plague, this stroke from God, I think was as a result of sin, and that's why there is this talk about the sin offering after they've been cleansed. And then the priest shall take some of the blood of the trespass offering and put it on the tip of the right ear of him who is to be cleansed, on the thumb of his right hand and on the big toe of his right foot. Now, all the sacrifices under the law of Moses looked forward in some way to the sacrifice of Jesus and the blood of Jesus. And this, of course, is how we should be, because we have all sinned. That after we realize we've been forgiven, we should walk in a way that recognizes that I have been cleansed by the blood of Jesus. We should use our hand, our right hand, in a way that is influenced by the blood of Jesus. And our hearing is to have, our ear is to have the blood of Jesus upon it. That is, that we, as it were, listen to this world through the filter, if you like, of the fact that Jesus died for me and I have been cleansed. I look at life, I listen to life, I act in life, I walk in life as someone who has sinned and has been forgiven. Now, if you don't have the humility to recognize that you have sinned and are worthy of God's judgment, you won't have that. You will simply be a Christian on a cultural level because this was how you were brought up, or this was mum and dad's religion or whatever. But true Christianity is not mum and dad's religion. It's not just something we drifted into. This is a radical experience of having really realized that I have sinned and deserve to be judged, but through the blood of Jesus I have been saved. So he's then to be anointed with oil. He is to be totally accepted. And he was to offer the animals for his sin offering and his burnt offering. But if he is poor and can't afford so much, he can offer one male lamb for the trespass offering and two turtle doves or two young pigeons, such as he is able to afford. So all the time you see that God is sensitive to poor people. He's sensitive to the fact that if the man had been, or the woman had been hit with this punishment, they might not have money, they might not have much in the way to offer, but they were to offer such as they are able to afford. And I love that about God, his sensitivity to the poor, his sensitivity to those who really don't have money. And I think that we should be the same and should realize also that there are levels upon which you can serve God. You can serve God with the lamb or with the turtle doves or the pigeons or whatever. The important thing is that we want to offer. And then you read about leprosy in a house. When I put a spreading leprosy in a house, I think that, again, this can't refer to leprosy as we now know it, the disease called Hansen's disease, because it doesn't get into houses or garments in the way that it describes here. This was when God cursed a physical building. And again, the priest must inspect the house. And as we found in the previous chapter, the key issue is whether the leprosy has spread or whether it's simply some dry rot or something that looks like this plague, but it isn't. In the same way, as there are people who might appear to be very sinful, who actually, it's just the appearance, it's just the rough appearance or the result of past behaviour that they've now repented of. And so, if the house was really full of leprosy, they were to take stones out of the house, but if the plague comes again and breaks out in the house, after they've tried to scrape the house and plaster it, then eventually the house is pronounced unclean and it is to be taken down. And this language is used later about the temple, that eventually God inspected the temple and found that the whole thing was rotten, and so, as Jesus said, the temple will be destroyed and not one stone shall be left upon another. Because God's house had been totally corrupted by their religion.